sometimes they have to kill him. They have to kill him. Because they can't break off spirit.
We choose to right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Keepers Radio, which is sponsored by Oklahoma Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace and the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, also known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia, of Mexico, Texas, the United States Reservation and Church. And we're welcoming back Grandfather Clifford Mahudi. How are you this evening, Clifford?
I'm doing excellent.
I'm glad to hear that. Mark and I were talking a little bit about what's going on in current affairs. Can we talk current events a little bit? Volcanoes and riots and stuff.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. What were you saying, Mark, about what was going on around the world?
Well, about 2 hours ago, we took about a 2.1 in the center of the Yellowstone caldera.
Oops.
Now, you know, it's getting tremors and stuff before, but this is the first time I think we've seen something going up into that magnitude. It's not huge, but it's bigger than stuff before. And we've also seen a lot of activity over in Kamchatka, Russia, and Alaska with 7 points and above on both of them. So there's a lot of activity, maybe, so things might be heating up.
I guess. What do you hear, Clifford, about what's going on?
Well, you know, as far as the Yellowstone area was concerned, about 2 years ago, you remember when the buffalo started moving out of there?
Yeah.
And a lot of activity related to the wildlife that live up in the mountains were seemed to be migrating. And I think this was happening at a very large scale, but because there are those sacred places are guarded by the United States government, and so they probably kept a lot of that from not going out to the public. We do know in our teachings that we do know that we're at that stage now where activities such as earthquakes, such as weather patterns that were not normal will start happening. And so these were some of the few things that I was taught as a young person that by the grandfathers and the grandmothers and also the wisdom keepers. So I think that, I mean, I believe that it's on schedule. And it's going to start out, it's sort of like a musical symphony score. You'll be like a prelude, and then the heavy stuff will start coming in at a broader scale. So this is, it's sort of like a warning type thing. And then when it's that activity of the warning and abandonment of those areas, then the real heavy stuff will start coming in. So I've been out on the road up in New Mexico, so I haven't kept up with anything on the news or anything. But the weather is usually an indicator.
Oh, what kind of travels have you been involved in here recently?
Well, I was up in northern New Mexico, Albuquerque, up in the country, and I have a brother that lives up there. And also I met with some people that have been quite involved with the our Star Knowledge Conference group, and we have a very close-knit organization, so we were communicating and talking about some of the concerns that individuals have and also on a more tribal scale or on a group concern. So I was meeting with some people up there and also having contact with some of the latest things that the Star Brothers are telling us.
And we'd love to hear that. Are you allowed to say much?
Well, no, right now at this point, because there's a lot of information, and my way of looking at it is that I want to do a comparative analysis and tie it into, again, like what is happening right now.
Very wise.
And so we do not go out with something that most people do, and then we don't want it to become like the worst thing that could happen. It could be a hoax, or it could be something that somebody took off the internet and diverted into something that is more like a money making thing. So we analyze, and I contact other people like myself, and then we actually sit down and we go to a council, sort of, you know, and look at it from many different standpoints, so that our information has been researched, it has been cross analyzed. So we do this with these people that have. We do not like to use the internet, for example. It's a one-on-one, which we Indians have been doing for centuries.
Right.
Because of the interference of many different electronic gadgetry, and although they're very sophisticated, complex listening devices all over the world, we would rather sit under a tree somewhere in the mountains with a little contact with the outside, even though they can listen to us.
Absolutely.
Where are the Navajo cult talkers when we need them, you know?
yeah, exactly. And I know they can listen to us because it's happened to me two times in front of different people, you know, like 10 years, 15 years apart. I said, you know, look up there and let's do a countdown. You know, one was in south of Kanab, Utah. My wife and I was working down there temporarily. We went to St. George to see a movie, and we came back right about midnight. I saw this light coming down from the north, and I said, look up there. I said, that does not have the red and green running lights. I said, let's, just for the heck of it, let's say, hey, turn your lights on it when it gets to the zenith. And that's exactly what it did. It went from the size of Venus to the size of the moon for about 5 seconds. And I had something similar like that happen in, and I was trying to explain where Vega was to a friend of mine. And I said, you see that Fast Walker satellite coming in from the west, the south. And I said, in 10 seconds, that'll pass right by Vega. And I did, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And that little tiny, what looked like a Fast Walker, all of a sudden, this bright light swept out to the rear of its direction of travel and down on us for 5 seconds, and then it just shut off and went on its way. It was crazy. It's just nuts.
Yeah.
I know they listen, and if you'll talk to them, they'll respond. But
yes.
We never have. I always meant to talk with you. The whole thing with Robert Morning Sky happened, before I was really kind of involved. Did you ever know him, or was he reputable? What do you know anything about his? Because wasn't he with your people?
Well, he claims to be half Hopi and half Apache. I've talked to a lot of Hopi, especially my contemporaries. And nobody's ever heard of him, but he did state that he was half Hopi, and he was taught by his Hopi grandfather, whoever that was. And on the other side of the coin, that he claims to be an Apache, but there are so many different tribal groups of Apache, whether he's a Mescalero, whether he's a White Mountain Apache, whether he's Hickory, Yavapai, I don't know.
Membrano,
When I first started going into this information systems about ufology and other things, I read his Terra papers, what he calls Terra papers. And all it is my take on it. Oh, because I've read quite extensively of Zechariah Sitchin. So what my take or my analysis in the scientific methodology was that he took that information and tried to squeeze it into the Hopi system. And to me, it just did not make sense. So what I did was that I sent the word out that I would like to meet with him, especially around Sedona. And the closest I've ever got was a person that used to work with him some time back, but that person did not want to divulge anything more than that. That person knew him. And the other thing, too, is that last year, I think about in the spring, the Star Knowledge people had consulted him in Arizona. And I understand that he lives in Scottsdale. And so I still have an open invitation for him to sit down with me, because I would like to talk with him and see where he got all this information and how it fits into the Southwest Pueblo history, the connection of UFOs and all that. And it's primarily for his information that can help me to put the pieces together of a giant puzzle. If he does indeed have the information about the Hopi and all the prophecies, he could probably be the last of the of that generation that's got the information, because I talk to a lot of Hopi elders, and we all talk among each other, and a lot of that is being lost. The younger generation Hopi is coming in with information that does not fit in with what the elders are their information system. So if he can come out of wherever he's at and contact me, I would really appreciate that. So far he's never contacted me, and nobody would ever tell me who he really is. And so, and again, in the Indian community, unless he changed it to a white man's name as Robert Morningsky, it's kind of I know most of the Indians here in the Southwest, their last names, but really that is an offshoot of the regular Indian names, and so it's kind of I'm kind of curious about who this individual is. So that's about it. So I have an open invitation for him to come and sit down with me, or have contact with me, whatever, you know.
From what I read, there was some interesting things about actually, you know, meeting with and helping to give shelter to a stranded ET, and that would really break things, you know, wide open. And his comparison, I always thought his comparison of some Hopi phrases and some Sumerian phrases was interesting. But I've never been able to contact him. Believe it or not, about 10-15 years ago, a fellow claiming to be his son contacted me and said, "Hey, do you know how can I get a hold of my dad?" So you're not alone.
Oh, okay. Well, he lives in Scottsdale.
Oh, okay. Well, so what's going on with? Oh, by the way, tell Rich Boylan, you know, he owes me an interview since 1996, and he said he'd come on. We'd love to have him on sometime.
Okay.
And next time you get near Nashville, I guess you guys were pretty close. I just wasn't able to get over there. Yeah, tell us where some of the gatherings you're going to have. Do you have a schedule going, you know, yet for this year?
Which gathering?
Star Nation conferences.
If you look at the website, it's called StarKnowledgeEnterprises.com. They got the schedule on there. I think the next one is the Sundance.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah,
because I'd like to meet you.
Yeah, the person that is the head of that organization is Golden Light Eagle, Chief Golden Light Eagle.
Right. Yeah, I thought I thought Rich Boylan was involved with that somehow.
Well, he might be, but actually, Chief Golden Light Eagle is the head of that enterprise, and I will be with him on the vernal equinox in Serpent Mount.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Huh. Well, that's not too far from where.
So if you look at the schedule for Serpent Mount, I believe it's on March 18th in that area.
Right.
In that weekend. Well, whenever closest to the equinox.
Right.
I was there last year. I was there last year, so they invited me back again. My subject this year is going back to the Indian planting ways and using natural make natural food and not have anything to do with GMO stuff.
Good idea.
So that should be interesting.
That's a good idea. And, well, let your mind wander, if you don't mind, and you know, whatever comes to mind, you know, fill us in. Tell us what you think people need to know right now.
Well, I think one of the things that's happening, which is going to be very crucial within the next year, is the election for the next president. There's a lot of things that are happening that doesn't make any sense. And if you look at any of the TV shows that are going on about the statistics that's involved, and also the social part of it, about all the, and these are the ones that the grandfathers used to talk about in my teachings when I was a young man, is that their predictions or their prophecies. Well, actually, we never used to call it prophecies or predictions. They just said that in the future, I guess that's a prophecy, huh? In the future, these things will happen. But we were very simple in our interpretation. We did not go into fancy language. We did not go into allegories or metaphors or whatever. It was direct. Like people will come and inhabit this our land here, and there will be overpopulation. When overpopulation occurs, the people will go into starvation. Very succinct. And these people that will come in are not people that we all are familiar with as far as spirituality, humanness, love, loving. Those traits or those things that a good human being is supposed to have. And this will be sort of like the dark side people that do not have conscience, do not have spirit, do not have heart. And they were directed when they used to speak about these things.
Well, they're dead,
not
but they're walking around.
Yeah.
Well, you know that I was at a group last night. Well, two nights ago, we were talking about this. They're not gonna get. There's nothing anybody can do. Because these contracts, these agreements were already written among those that are in power. A good example is the Iranian nuclear agreement that cost the taxpayers and the minimum wage earners their taxes, our taxes, people like us that are retired, ex-military, so on. And when they're going to, not only is, what is it, $150 billion that they're going to give to those Iran, but I think there's more than that. And I think the nuclear weapons and all that already left about 2-3 years ago, and they're just polishing off the deals. I remember if you look at the, if you look at a film we did about 3 years ago, it's on YouTube. It's called Expedition to Sipapu. Sipapu, the Hopi Sipapu and all the other Pueblo, Sipapu is the emergence place and or holy place, sacred place. And this is in the Grand Canyon. Well, that part of that film is showing helicopters that are bringing in mining equipment into the Grand Canyon, and they were already mining uranium in that canyon at that time by executive order of Obama. So,
yeah, it's a no-fly zone.
The
tourist planes are not allowed to fly below the rim in that area.
Well, we know that. We researched that. And we found out that through our research that we got pictures of the helicopters. We got pictures of the staging area for all the pipe and all the equipment, 18-wheelers, the whole nine yards, out in the middle of nowhere on the North Rim. Anyway, so if, and for example, that's the one that the people talked about. And what is really of concern is that the Indian people, that's our Garden of Eden, and we can't even go over there and do worship because it's a national park. We have to request the bureaucratic maze just to go over there and talk to our spirit people over there, which are still there. So this is one of the things that is happening all over the country. And my take on that the other night when we were discussing where they're going to put these refugees, where they're going to put these people that Obama invited. Well, if you recall, way back in the Second World War, they had internment camps for the Japanese. And one of them happened to be down in the Grand Canyon. And so I think that in, I believe that because that there's so much land out there, say, for example, like the Navajo Indian Reservation, what's to prevent the bureaucrats and the politicians with military force to come and place all these refugees right in the middle of Indian reservations? They've been trying to get rid of Indians now for 400 years, so that would be a good way to get rid of them.
Well, Clifford, I read something where they're going to send a lot of them to Montana, maybe to Idaho too, because, you know, there's a lot of certain kinds of people that think a certain kind of way that would be diametrically opposed to the refugees. So that would be a good way to start a fight.
Well, you know,
put those two groups of people together.
Well, that's why those guys are fighting right now, and that's why they took over those areas that they put those two guys in jail. That's just a prelude. I mean, everything is all set. It's all in motion, and it's all going to happen. This is why, if you look at the Democrats that are running for president, if you or I did that, they will put us in jail forever for not only 99 years, but 99 centuries. And nobody touches that woman because that's part of the game. So that's what really is sad is that 90% of all American Indian tribes how little they're registered voters is that they're 99% Democrat.
Yeah.
So they're gonna be stabbed in the back, and they're gonna wonder why they're told they're given X number of days to pack their stuff and get out of there.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you brought that. I'm glad you brought that up, Clifford, because you know I'm a libertarian, and we haven't had a constitution since 1933. You know, with the beginning of the Trading with the Enemies Act and the outlawing of gold. It's just, you know, people talk about constitution. That's window dressing. I mean, you can't even bring up a constitution in a court hardly without, you know, getting slapped with a contempt, you know, and I'm glad to hear you bring that up. And
I'm 72 years old. I studied the white man's language. I studied the white man's concept. The first thing I learned was that the Constitution of the United States, they stole that from the Iroquois Confederates and put their name on it. This is our Constitution.
They just left
well,
out
that's
the
true.
They left out what they called the petticoat government. They laughed at women, you know. The whole concept is, you know, pretty much recorded in history. But you know, people around the world now are beginning to say, hey, if we ever do get a world government, let's adopt the great law or something like it. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And, yeah, because of that actually pretty good way to govern.
Yeah.
And well, that was the first, the actually the first thing I got involved with, the Walk on the Red Road, was a group that was proselyting the Guyana Shigawa, the Great Law, and learned quite a bit about it. And it's a darn good system, and it mirrors a lot of the clan systems, you know, from the east. And don't let, if I interrupt you, I'll get you off. You know, go ahead and continue. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's just one of those points that will happen, and I don't have any other way. There's no other way that it can be solved anymore, because we're now back at the history repeats itself, and we're at that stage now, and the Indians knew that. And that's why, see, they couldn't get rid of the Indians by a divide and conquer type approach. That's what they're doing right now in the United States. And all the refugees is going to be used as a catalyst. Just like you say, you know, those cowboys up in Montana, they finally got along together with the cowboys and the Indians, and then going to throw those guys from the Middle East in there.
Yeah.
They're going to start war again.
And the whole thing was predicted by Nostradamus, you know, wrote about this. And I was talking about this with my friends back in the mid-80s. I'd read a book by Rene Norbergen called Nostradamus Predicts the End of the World, and it even predicted that the Prince of Monaco would be Albert, and back then it was Rainier, and Albert was Crown Prince. And and I was thinking back then it would be, because I was in the Guard in Oregon, and our job was to plan for if the National Guard left, we were to take over the armory. As a matter of fact, there was a time in Portland during an ice storm where military rule, not martial law, but military rule was put in place, and we dispatched all the police and fire and everything. And so that was our job, was to plan for such a thing, or in case of a general mobilization. So we were, you know, talking about a lot of what ifs and one offs and. It was interesting to think about, you know, having a plan for something like that. But I always thought it would be the whole Muslim thing that Nostradamus talked about would be a military invasion. But I didn't understand enough about their way of thinking, at least the radical Islamists that wherever they migrate to, that's their house of war, and they're out to, you know, convert you, and a lot of them will kill you, and all that's happened, and it is happening, and that's just, Mad Bear Anderson, you know, used to talk about the prophecy of the red snake and the white snake, and I know Mike Bastine has got a, you know, his idea, and he's probably right, but I always looked at it, you know, as the Tuscarora prophecy of the white snake, you know, the white people, and the red snake across the pole was the communists. And they said at some point a black snake would come out of the ocean and enter into a battle. And at some point, now the Indians were separate, because they said they would be released from their reservations, and that tells me maybe a financial collapse. And that they would go to the hilly country and burn tobacco and get to know one another. But eventually the black snake, whatever it was, would be defeated and would swim away and never return. And I don't know.
Yeah, this is that. We're now probably into, I would say, just over 10% of what it is. The reason that you don't see it it's because of the trickery that the government has always played. I mean, they got the technology to hide exactly what they're doing in front of us. They've always had that, but the advanced technology is now there. And these are some of the things that they talked about way back about when I was a kid back in the 50s, but there was no names in our language, for example, for things that are happening, especially the technological part, but they referred it in terms of what they knew. It's just like airplanes. I was just watching Ancient Aliens, and we're Indian tribes with, for example, in Zuni, they call them the airplanes metal eagles because they didn't have a term for an airplane. So that's what they referred to way back when they were talking about some of the elements of what this collapse would involve. And one of them was the little-eyed people. That's the term that is used for the Orientals, whether they be Korean, whether they be Chinese, because they come from, they're all the same. They're a little-eyed people, Orientals.
Uh-huh.
So that was one group that they talked about. And so there were other, at that time, I did not realize that there were other nationalities that had certain traits as far as appearance was concerned. Not only that, but the character of those individuals, what they do. If you look at the Middle East nations, they've been at war for thousands of years with each other. Why are the stupid Americans going over there and saying that, well, we're going to win them by democracy? That's not why they're doing that, because, first of all, go to your gas pump today. I just filled up my tank in Albuquerque at $1.47 a gallon. And it backfired on the United States government to be over there and help creating the war, and now it collapsed. And the rich guys that are running the United States, senators and the president, it's eating their lunch right now. So I can't understand why the stupid Americans, the dumb Americans, couldn't figure that out. If a reservation Indian like me can figure that out when I was a young punk, how come these so-called PhDs and all these people that claim to be intelligent can't figure it out? And by deductive reasoning is that they're part of that whole damn system.
Yeah, I'd much rather hang around with dumb blanket Indians than guys like my dad, who were engineers for 60 years. And now you put, a guy like my dad together with a guy like you, and then you can make some sense out of things. And, by the time he passed away, he was beginning to figure it out, but he was over 80. So, if you were to give people advice about where they should settle and come to live, in these times, I've heard, inside the four sacred mountains, what advice would you give people if they were good people, no matter what color?
Stay away from the coast for the time being. Go up to the mountains. Go up to the desert in Arizona, New Mexico, Oklahoma, up north around Montana. That would be the safe zone, except Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Wyoming, and if you study the earthquake zones, like the different faults, probably in between those areas would be the best. But the other thing too is that you've got to go back up there and make connect, and this is where this is where the high mountains come in. If you look at some of the civilizations where they're at, Machu Picchu, you know, the people that are up in the, on the other side of the world that are up in the, like those, up in Nepal, remember where all the monks live?
Yeah, Himalayas.
Up in the Himalayas and,
yeah,
and the Rocky Mountains. If,
they've been there for a while, too.
Yeah, so this is probably, in Mexico, they've already destroyed it. South America, they've already destroyed it. So, I think the oceans will be the first activity. There's nations, there's many nations that are the water nation people are already in motion. And I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what any scientist or what any geologist says or whatever. Inside the middle of the earth is a civilization that is far more concerned than we hear up on the top. So this is where it's, if you can figure out a way to get back, get into there with them, I don't care about heaven because there's no such thing, but I think that if I had a choice, I'd go down into the middle world where all my ancestors are at.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Beats
yep.
a deep think, underground base anyway.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah. I know. About 15 years ago, I read a story of some spelunkers in Arkansas, and they got into one of the deep caves down in northern Arkansas, and something started throwing rocks at them as they were going through one passage, and they saw what looked like a real hairy beast, and eventually it ran away. But they, as they advanced past where that guardian was, they came to they actually were looking into the side of a tube, and on the other side of the tube, they could see a faraway city that was down there. And what's really interesting is about 15 years before that, a friend of mine pointed out in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, you know, which talks about the last days, you know, the 10 toes of Nebuchadnezzar. It wasn't just iron, but it was iron mixed with miry clay, and iron was associated with Rome, and we're basically a system has come down from Rome in a republic. But that miry clay, he pointed out to me that the color of miry clay, it's kind of a grayish green with a very, very slight red, and he says, then look at, I think he said Revelations 13, and he said, whoever's writing that, I guess John was told, you know, look upwards, and he heard a voice as it were of a trump, and a door opened, and there was, he was carried up there, and there's 24 elders sitting around in a circle, and in the center, there was four beasts, and if you can imagine, it looked like it was looking through a sardine stone. Well, you know, if you look at, if you're in a command center, you know, you look through that that kind of glass. It has a kind of a rainbow hue as you move around it, and you know, he could have been on a UFO, you know, looking at the command chair, and above it, four monitors, and each one of the monitors had a different image on it, and. This is the thing I keep going back to. This is really important work that you're doing, Clifford, because when they do come, now I've heard some people say, well, you know, if they offer to take you with them, don't go with them. But, you know, the question is who do we trust? You know, and I guess that's why we teach on this show. We need to get in touch with Creator. We need to know, you know, what's going to be happening. And so that's really the real reason. I'm trying to sort all this out, you know, since 1985.
Well, you know, that reminds me, Otter, what you said there is, you know, down in Mexico. Mexico for a while now. I don't know how many years. You know, they've had UFOs coming out of volcanoes, out of the ground and stuff. They look like, you know, plasma balls or something usually.
Yep.
And, you know, some of them get out there and you'll have 200, 500 people sitting on the rim of a volcano videotaping this. They show them on the regular Mexican news and stuff. And I heard from one guy, I don't know if it's true or not, so I can't, you know, vouch for it, but he said that there was some government, U.S. government officials that were down there, and one of these, some of these things literally just came right out of the ground. And some of the U.S. government officials, one or a couple of them went in, and he said that these beings or something that are running these ships, actually a ship itself might be the being, I'm not sure, but he said what they were told was the people, these plasma ships were, and the people behind them, a long time ago used to live on the surface.
Right.
And long, long time ago, some UFOs or something came in, contacted them, and told them something about themselves. And they said after that contact, within less than 100 years, their civilization had completely changed, and they had become what they are now. That's what I was told one story. I forget where it came from now, but years ago I heard all this. But, yeah, so I don't know if Clifford knows any more about that or not.
We still go through those rituals every year. We go through those rituals every year in Zuni, New Mexico. During December, of what we reenact, like the Togans reenact the space people when they made contact with them. We reenact the prayers, the rituals, the songs, everything that I'm sure that is pretty. There's a lot of things that have been lost, but the core is still there. And I'm talking about a very, very complex system. Being a mathematician, a scientist, engineer, it took me 30 years to analyze it, and it's in my language.
Well, does the Zuni, I know in the Hopi ones, they have something in their stories like that at that time of year that...
Well,
They have some certain songs and stuff, and they relate that, and they really connect into some of those songs connect into the Pleiades.
Well, you know, it's everywhere. There's so many of them. It depends on which group, what ceremony, what dance. But the only problem that is there is that a lot of they're experts in their interpretation of the language of the rituals and the procedure. But the problem that I have found with not only my people but other Pueblo people is that if you ask them what is the connection with the rest of the universe, they're experts in the language. They're experts in the procedure, dress, code, the codices, whatever, because they're deities. But once you start telling them the connection of what it is on the scientific part, like what I did, you know, I compare one of the Kachinas with a Saturn V rocket. And that's what got me ostracized from Zuni, because it's just like being, I don't know what the real definition of heresy is, but
uh-huh.
it's just like, you know, like I am now the devil because I interpret it in a way that is against their whole thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had one of the Hopi elders, and he drew a thing on, had it brought out. He told me when I first met him, he says, well, I had a dream you were coming, and you're going to bring me my own stuff. And then, but during that conversation, he pulled out this napkin that had some drawings on it that kind of looked like a cross between a, you know, a Kachina and a Star Trek character, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
And he pointed to them. He said, okay, he said, this one, and they looked a little bit more like Kachinas, but he said, this one is like science officer. This one's like captain.
Yeah.
This one's like medical officer. And, he was saying that. So that fits in kind of with, I think, with some of the same things you've been saying.
Well, if you take the combination, okay, take the military, United States military, chain of command, okay? Especially when it comes down to ships. Because an airplane, a spacecraft, a boat, they're all ships, right?
That's right.
Right? One is the water, one is an air, one is an interdimensional.
That's why the Navy's in charge of Space Command.
Well, the Navy is in charge of everything.
Well, they're the senior service. My dad was a captain.
Well, why do they run Area 51? The Navy runs Area 51, and it's not even close to any water, right? But the reason is that there's a lot of ships out there. And they commonly call it spaceships.
Right, that's right. The universe is like an ocean.
But anyway, I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Going back to what I'm trying to make a point here is that I am very versed in both military chain of command protocol, and the other thing too is that if you take the same system and apply it to the Kachina, which is one group, okay? One group is the Kachina system. And they also have the, if you put it side by side with the military and the Kachina system, now throw in Star Trek. Okay, what the Hopi said is that they have a spot in their chain of command in the Hopi system, which I am very aware of myself too. Okay? So, are you still there?
Yep.
Yep,
oh,
I'm here.
Anyway, so it is so parallel throughout the universe. The Indians or the Aborigines or whatever they call us, we did not invent that system. It was given to us. It was set our ancestors maybe millions of years ago, and so that they put all this in the system, and the only problem is that it's not written. Why should we have a written system when we can telepathically talk to them if we have a question, right? Why do I need a library when I got Google?
Yeah.
So these are the same parallels, and these are the things that I make analogies on, which I throw people off right away because they never studied it. It's an educational process. So I can sit down with the Hopi, the Lakota, the Cherokees, and then we can talk about star systems, star commands, and all that, and they're one and the same. But the only problem on the indigenous tribes of planet Earth is that they have a different language. And so we all have different languages. So this is, and it was designed like that. Because of the various systems throughout the whole universe, and for whatever particular specialty, just like the Hopi guy told you. And so this is why you have to really go into the gut chronology, the linguistics and also scientific terminology that is parallel to what the Indians talk about. For example, we don't call it there's a term of that, oh, the ethos. We don't call it, there's no definition in Zuni called ethos, but there is a substance that they refer to, which is only for the gods. One of the simplest things is that the world, the earth, changes its atmosphere from during the day to the nighttime, and this is why the nighttime is for the space people, the star people, and the daytime is for the humans and other living things that were brought by the ET or Space Brothers, and each one has a time and a place for everything. Today we mixed it up, you know. And one of the biggest things that created this whole mess was the interferences of all the frequencies in the world. So we don't have what I term the cosmic magic to be with a human brain, individual spirituality, heart. There is no more connection. Those that have the connection know how to deal with it. It's just like putting on a repellent. For example, like when mosquitoes are after your butt, you put on repellent, and the mosquitoes leave you alone. And there's ways to do that. This is why our holy people and our medicine people can still maintain that contact. I think the lamas and the monks are still practicing it today, so, which is a very, very high science system, but nobody can understand it. Yeah, and explain it in XYZ, 1, 2, 3, because it's not in their little box of knowledge, so it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So
there's definitely more questions than answers.
What's that?
There's definitely more questions than there are answers out there right now.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what's happening.
Well, Clifford, I know that a couple of the Mayan elders worked with. One of the things they talked about was they spoke of a long time ago, what you're talking about, where you were given knowledge or information. They pretty much say the same thing, but they also say that they said it was the grandfathers from the stars, but they also said that at a point that they would return, and it appeared from their understanding, at least, is they would be returning at a certain point in time. You know, it would be what we would probably call a change of a world cycle. Do you have, you know, similar understandings of that from Zuni background or your other knowledge that you've learned?
Well, all the Inca tribes, if you look at the Mayans and our brothers to the south, we're all one group. We're one big family, okay? It's only problem is that the white man and the anthropologists and the historians and all that, they reversed it. They reversed it. Because if you look at what is theoretically Lumaria, okay, or Mu, and the creation stories are basically the same. It's called creation, but it really wasn't. It was a migration. migration, and so when they dispersed all the different Indians, the reason that they dispersed the Indians to where they are at today, the Mayan brothers, the Inca brothers, the Indians that live in the jungles and out there, because there was so much population. And so they had to disperse them. And we're talking probably millions and millions of Indians when the Space Brothers came and made them functional by a super speed evolution, which would be like where they restructured them, let me put it this way, to make them functional. Because and then there was millions, maybe millions. I mean, it had to be millions of years ago. And they used to come, and it's sort of like if you plant something, you got to go check on them, see how it's going. You got to continuously weed it out. You continuously make it a better strain. You continuously make different colors, maybe different shapes, different taste of your garden. Well, so when they used to come down like that, they knew that these were the gods coming out. Even to this day, we still practice that. What they did in the past was that those beings, some people call them ETs, some people call them gods. We call them the keepers of our ways. That's what we call them. Our fathers, our grandfathers. There's certain group that we call them grandfathers, and there's the next group we call them fathers. And depending on what they look like when they appear. When they would come to the civilizations, which they made and made us have that, whether it be a pyramid, whether it be a crystalline structure of some sort, they say, you take care of these things. They gave us a book of instructions. They gave us a book of record keeping. And how do you keep records? Well, there's many, many different ways. And so they would come and visit to make sure that the human, that the two-leggeds are going according to their schedule and their requirements. And so when they would come, they would have ceremony. They would have a real spiritual connection. It would be like what they do in many countries when the Pope comes around, you know.
Right.
They go through their rituals. And so this went on for centuries, maybe thousands and thousands of years, until, pretty soon they started evolving. So they, evolution of other species from other parts of the planet will come, but they were not here to hurt them. And it was sort of like a curiosity, but they were also always on a mission too. And this was at the direction of the Space Brothers. So when the common denominator, the common line that they asked these civilizations, they asked them, who put this temple? Who put this big, massive mountain carving over here? And the indigenous people would always, and their descendants would always say, well, he was already here when we got here. It's the common theme all over the world. But what happened is that at a certain stage, they started coming, and all of a sudden they started coming less and less. But the information was in their history, in their build up, in their DNA. So the first ones that came over was those people that were their mission was go, God, and glory. In this case, they were the Spanish. So they were wearing helmets, and you know, they had this armor, and of course they were used to that because the information system said, oh yeah, they used to dress like this. And so when they first came over, they did the same thing that their ancestors of how many years back used to do them. They gave them ceremony, they invited them, they gave them whatever it was. And the common theme among a lot of researchers is that there's a lot of gold that was on this planet. So they thought it was that time again, so they opened their gates, they opened the welcome, and they had to get a big feast and present them with all their valuable possessions. And this time around, they start chopping their heads off. They start killing them. So this is where a lot of these people, like the Mayans and all those tribes that were down in Mexico, Central America, and further south, the word went out to the people up here in the north, which my ancestors that were the first contact of the Spanish. So they, it's like what we're going to go through in the very near future. They did not expect that, but all of a sudden their world was turned upside down, and they were killing people. They didn't know what it was because these people never had that type of life before. So this is another happening that's going to go through, which will be equivalent to that. And by that I mean there's going to be a lot of death that's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of disruptions that's going to happen. And this is where now we're at that stage. In 1955, the elders of my tribe, the Zuni tribe, say that we are now at the door of that happening again. The hope is, if you recall way back in the 50s, got together and they went to what they call the House of Micah.
Yep.
If you recall how they explained it, you know what happened to them. They told them to get out of there, they kicked them out. So as far as the conqueror is concerned, they're more stupid than the people that were here. But they claim that we were savages and that we don't have the mental capacity. Actually, they had more if they had just sat down and talked with them,
yep.
And which nobody did. And I've researched this quite a bit, whether it be Mexico, South America, Central America. They never talked to those people. They just killed them. So now most of the stuff has been lost because those records that were there, they were inscribed in gold. So it's probably sitting in the Vatican right now.
Well, I understand the Serpent Mound, when it was first excavated, had gold, what looked like water pipes and a lot of interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah. They used it over here quite a bit, and... they used minerals, and it was very abundant. And, of course, gold is a mineral, but it's a rare earth metal. And, of course, if you go back to other things like Sitchin, Anunnaki, and all that, and we even told one of our Indian boys that he was part of, you know, he's got a blood type of Anunnaki. I called him that. Not only are you Anunnaki, but you're also Illuminati. So we'll call you an Illuminati. Illuminati.
What blood? Are we kidding around with him, or what blood type did he have?
Oh yeah, no, I'm just kidding around with him.
Well, you know, they say things about people with red hair, but you know, there's an interesting thing about their red hair, you know, and the dynasties down through the Hebrews, and but I think the most shocking thing I ever saw, for some reason, years back, I saw a very good artist rendering of Mayan priests, you know, standing, you know, near the top of their doing ceremony on their pyramid, and standing right there with them is an ET, and it was obviously it was to invoke people's to remember the movie. Oh, I'm having a brain fart here. The one with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Total Recall.
No, the one where the alien came and Arnold had to get in a bank of mud because the alien could see his heat signature.
Oh, I know what you're talking about too now.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
It was that alien, and I went, whoa, you know, jeez, you know, and you know, yeah, what would happen if these ancient people that may have seeded us, you know, and they came back today, and you know, who, yeah, well, you know, until it happens, you know, we could talk about it, but it sure is interesting to talk about who they could be and what might happen. See. Oh, wow.
I don't think. The real Indians, the true Indians, not the one that became Indians right after Dances with Wolves. The real Indians will accept it because it's part of their whole spirituality.
Right.
Even in our. The only reason that they became invisible was a pact, or I guess you might say a truce or a treaty of many, I don't know how many thousands of years ago, and one of the when those beings actually used to come to the villages, they used to abduct people. Like they do today.
Yeah. Well,
if you can look at any one of my presentations that I made in any of them, I talked exactly about what occurred on that, where the Kachinas came from. So when they talk about these people that are the experts, the mainstream archaeologists and anthropologists, when they say that, the Great Kiva is at Chaco Canyon, that's not true, because they did not use Kivas until after Pueblo III, which is around maybe about end of 1200. And prior to that, that's when the Kachina was brought into play. It's not very far. It was not very long ago. But prior to that, those were the real deals that would be the real life Kachinas, which were the star people. So that's what I talk about on that on one of those presentations. So and part of that. There were so many different species of ET, even the giants. The giants are also known here. ET, Chewbacca's buddies were around at that time. Red-haired little guys, about 2 to 3 feet high, were everywhere. And they still exist today, but they're in a different dimension now because of the bad people that are trying to kill them and all that. So if you really want to be technical, ask a question at any of these meetings. Has anybody shot a Sasquatch? and nobody has, because you can't shoot those guys. You can't kill those guys. except if you watch Harry Anderson, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So there's so damn many things which is so simple to tell, so simple, but like what my engineering professors used to tell me, why are you making it so damn complicated? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to make complicated, and I figured out why they want to make it complicated, because they sell more books that way.
Uh-huh.
If I wrote a book, there'll be only one chapter, and you'll have a picture of the alien in there, and that's it.
So. By the way, I did find that picture. I messaged it to you through Facebook, and I put it right up on Mark's Facebook page, and yeah, it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
What's that?
But that picture of the predator type alien. You know, having just landed, and they're standing on top of the Mayan pyramids, and the.
Oh, that was the one. That was the, I think the that was the there was an Alien versus Predator movie where they.
Oh yeah.
I think it was.
Don't ever put down those movies, because they took a fact that is a scientific fact, and they put it in those movies, and it's just like a, what do you call it? It's just a teaser.
Sure.
And some of those are real facts. Now, one of the things that occurred with this past or last week was the resurgence of, the repeat of the X-Files, but it's updated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I listened to John Greenwald's lecture down at the MUFON meeting Saturday, and that's right after that football game is when it started. And his information at the meeting was, there's going to be a lot of facts in that movie. I mean, those series. I think there were six episodes. I only saw the first one, where it showed the UFO crash in northwestern New Mexico and how they hit that. But I don't think that was Aztec. I think it was somewhere else, because at that time, back in the 40s, that whole Four Corners area was isolated. A self-respecting coyote would not even go there. So,
uh-huh.
And there's other things on there that not only that was the information I read later on in the books, especially the things like faith magazines in those days. I was 10 years old when I started my research. Because they were so damn common on the Indian reservation, you know, we just took it for example. It was accepted as like anything else.
Back when you were a kid, you know, it was nobody was there in the Arizona Strip. But geez, if you try to drive out to Mount Trumbull now from the north, they've got some kind of seismic intrusion stuff. You'll either get a visit from a vehicle, or you'll be overflown by helicopter, because everybody I know that's gone out there to do ceremony has had that happen to them.
Oh, yeah. They watch us all the time.
Oh, they're probably listening, but, you know, I hope they're having a good time. Maybe they agree with us. Who knows? maybe they agree with us, and they're just worried about what the mainstream religions would do and all the implications of the culture imploding, and I don't know. No.
Maybe they're worried about losing their grip when purification happens, and that's game over for them, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially these late religious orders, you know, where like that guy that brought the gold tablets. So my first question to that was, Well, can I see the gold tablets that Moroni brought? And they don't want to. They don't want to tell me anymore after that.
I'm an equal
employment opportunity for all religions. I don't discriminate.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you had your prophecy that, or at least the Hopi did, you know, about the groups of people that would come in the shape of their hats, and they were told that the people came with the flat hats, the flat round hats, you know, after the Spaniards came and the others, and it says if they came, they would have a cross, but if it had a cross that had one leg that was too long, they would be out of balance. But if they came with a cross like the Celtic cross, they would be more friendly and more helpful. And guess what? They didn't, you know. I'm PO'd at my Mormon friends in Zion Security. I mean, those, I worked with those guys when I worked for the Boy Scouts in Salt Lake back in the '80s. And they're the ones that are running Peabody Coal and. And oh shit,
yeah.
You know, geez. Hey, we're gonna run out of stream here. We probably ought to run.
Okay.
I appreciate. Hey, thank you.
Nice
thank you so
you.
Much. And, you know, and it's really cool. We see you, you know, quite often on television, and hope you keep your appearances up, and hope to get to meet you someday in person.
Okay, excellent. Keep in touch.
Thanks a lot, Clifford. Bye bye.
Thank you.
And good night, Mark.
Good night, everybody.
See everybody next week. Bye.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. Ade homo kiyayo Wale washiye Ade homo kiyayo Uyanam hene Ade nami chihomo Uyanam hene yuwa Ashiya chechechiye. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
So that I may remember.